You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. Great song. You don't even have to like the Doobie Brothers to like this. Sing about being down in San Antonio. Favorite parts coming up, that's why you're listening to it. Here it comes. Stand by. I know it was too much music, but I don't really care. It's my show, and I'll do what the fuck I want to. So joining me from actually the great state of Texas, Tim Lynch. Timmy, what's going on?
Hey, not much, Mac. And I bet that after a bunch of beer 40 years ago, you could have done that better with that singing. I know there are times when you thought you were lying, Mac. I bet you.
Don't count on it. Don't count on it. I may have thought that I had done it better, but it would have been largely the same output. And so Tim joins us. And from Southern California in the rain today, Jeff Kenny joins us. Jeff, were you a Doobie Brother guy? Everybody was. Tell me, how could you not be a Doobie Brother fan, man?
Gotta be. It's like MacArthur Park, though, in the rain here today.
Let me tell you, I spent Thanksgiving with the Kenny family, and in the middle of the meal, we're sitting there, and this dude comes in the house, right? And I thought the guy lived there, and Jeff starts grumbling about breaking somebody's back or something like that, and then his wife, like, admonished him, and then the guy left, and I'm like, does he leave here? And he's like, they were like, no, he's just a friend of ours. So, I mean, this dude was so socially stupid that he walks in, he sees a family having Thanksgiving dinner, and he doesn't say, hey, I'll come back in a bit. Give me a call when you guys are done, to his friends, right? So we had a little bit of discussion about that. I had a similar experience when one of my son's friends, at a rectangular dinner table, the kid was 16, he sat down at one of the two narrow ends of the rectangle. Now, who the fuck does that when they're 16?
Yeah, I know. That's why I'm convinced my life's not going to end peacefully. I'm going to be like 89 and something like that's going to happen. And,
and you're going to go out in a ball of glory, just a flaming ball of glory?
I'll have a bread knife sticking out of my eyeball.
Bled to death, walking down the coast highway with a butter knife in his eyeball. It's a good story, though.
I can remember wandering in and out of Jeff's quarters there in Camp Lejeune when we were company commanders. I would just go in and grab a beer and shit if nobody was home.
Yeah, that's
okay. All right, well, but we're not talking about that. We're talking about walking in. Yeah. You come in the door, and you see the family sitting down, all, how many of us? Eight of us there that night? Yeah, in the middle of Thanksgiving dinner. Would you have looked around and said, hey, I'll come back and get my beer? Or would you have walked in and said, hey, what's up, everybody?
Yeah,
that's weird.
He's one of the charter Mensa groups of the next to
it. You know, it was unique. Okay, let's we'll do a little open forum. What do you want to talk about, Kenny?
Well, there's two things I wanted to talk about, and the first one was using the ninja missile to chop up some ISIS guy. I thought that was a pretty slick. I've never heard of an AGM-114 Romeo 9 X-ray missile that has six blades that went through.
What?
They went through. They got an ISIS guy. I guess this was a couple of days ago.
Hold on.
And
AGM.
Uh-huh.
Keep going.
AGM-114 Romeo 9 X-ray. The ninja missile. Have
Romeo
you ever heard of
that? 9. Hold on, I'm looking it up. Romeo 9 X-ray. No,
yeah.
Keep going. Tell us. Oh.
Yes.
R9X Hellfire missile modified for CIA kills.
Six folding sword like blades designed to smash through buildings and vehicles and jump. And they got pictures of this minivan that they hit. It hit right on the passenger side, front side, and it got a picture from the looking in, and it looks like a carnival house. It's like, holy smokes.
I'm watching.
Well, that's pretty slick.
I'm watching the video of the AGM-114R9X Hellfire missile modified for CIA kills in order to avoid collateral damages.
Right.
Yeah, it's pretty slick stuff. I've got it. That stuff like that, it's amazing. The links will go to minimize collateral damage, but damn it, you don't want to be on the receiving end of that.
Now the technology is to the point of, do you want us to hit them in the ass or the shoulder?
Right.
Oh, yeah, they hit them. They hit dead on top of the passenger, front passenger seat of the car, dead on top.
Yeah, that ain't right.
Yeah, that was something. But I got something weirder than that, though, which crossed my radar today. Go into Facebook and type suspicious white vans. There's a CNN article saying that Facebook posts have launched a panic across America to the point where the mayor of Baltimore went on the radio, TV, and said, beware of white vans. They're kidnapping people. Don't let anybody with a white van near you. And when the press asked the mayor, did the police tell you that? He goes, no, I read it on Facebook. How weird is that?
That's a white van scare. They thought those two guys shooting people in 2002 around the
D.C. Right.
That's right. White van, even
what's that guy's name? John Muhammad or John
Muhammad? Yeah. And then the kid. And so I typed in suspicious white van on Facebook, and you could scroll forever through posts to people. Y'all watch out for that white van. They're kidnapping kids, and it's the most ridiculous thing you've ever seen. And it's just it's amazing to me that this is a news item that police agencies have to address, saying, look, stop hassling people with white vans. There's no reports about this.
You pull up outside the school to pick up your kid.
Right now I'm sitting in a blue van. I'm going to have it painted white.
The ninja missile and white vans, there's the two things that just popped up today. I'm like, Dad, this is just too weird.
That is a pretty empty life, I got to tell you that.
Hey, man, I'm scouring looking for something interesting. When people turn in for the Lynch Kenny Hour, I don't think they're looking for standard fare. At least I wouldn't think.
No.
Hey, man, hit him with that fucking ATG.
No doubt.
Oh, my God. All right, Jeff, what's on your mind? Enough? Tim's got a void between his ears right now, so he's amusing himself with this kind of shit. Do you have anything substantial? Because obviously I don't either.
It's the twin unrest going on in the big eyes in the Middle East. Iraq and Iran are both in the throes of civil unrest right now, and the main unresters are Shias in both places. And where the Iranians just shot, you know, ostensibly or supposedly they shot hundreds of people in different cities in Iran. And because the internet or whatever it is shut down there, it's hard to get even a rumor of what's actually going on. But one of the latest things is that the Iranian government is supposedly charging people for the bullets that hit them. I mean,
the old Stalin thing.
Yeah. I was going to say, why have I heard that before, man?
Yeah, so this is, like, interesting to me that I think that's of course, not in Iraq, but in Iran, it's probably got a lot to do with the sanctions.
So yesterday I wanted to talk about this, and I think Jeff should become my Iran specialist. So you might need to go to work. You might become the Iran desk. So you might need to immerse yourself in all things Iran. So I found a Reuters report from I think Friday or Saturday talking about the sanctions, and they essentially shut down all cell phone service in Iran.
Right.
And so nobody could communicate. And the problem was, you know, people were responding evidently to them raising the price of gas, evidently in Iran, which is artificially low. Now, the problem is that the economy sucks. They don't pay the pensions that they're supposed to pay. And so we've seen this thing dust up now from the Green Movement to what happened like during the summer that got put down. Now, this supposedly took place in over 100 Iranian cities.
Right.
And so the report was pretty interesting, and the spin of, depending on who you spoke with, right, and who they were talking to, right, the hardliners was, look, the American sanctions aren't hurting the country, right? They're hurting the Iranian people. That's why they should be lifted. And right, I mean, so that's their take on it. And then the other, but when you move from there west, you have, you know, Shiites in Najaf and in where'd we do the Nasiriyah, right?
Yeah,
they burn
all
Shia cities. They burn the Iranian consulate. And they're telling, you know, they're having these huge riots, and there was something like over 200 people killed in Iraq in the last week, right, by government forces that are protesting and say, hey, I mean, the prime minister has resigned, and they're saying, hey, get this shit out of here, man. We want something that works. So that's interesting. And then I played a report from Lebanon, and Lebanon's had huge, so far, very, very peaceful protests. And what their deal is that, look, we have dysfunctional government. We don't have schools. We don't have health care. All the things that the government is supposed to be instrumental in providing don't work for us. And you have the traditional power lords in Lebanon, which are the Christians, right, and the Druze, and they're trying to retain power against this multi-factioned unrest that's bubbling up that crosses sectarian lines, crosses religious lines, and Lebanon is on the verge of another civil war of a different kind that throws out both the hierarchy of the Christians and the Hezbollah-led, right, Shiites. So it's pretty interesting across, you know, what was this span of influence of Iran is now a shitstorm in a matter of a few months.
Yeah, and so they basically got to make a choice. I mean, they just try and, you know, muscle their way through it until, you know, hopefully quell it like the way they used to do things traditionally all over the Middle East, or they give up the idea of that nuke shit, and we release some of the sanctions.
And when you look back, one of the smartest things that the president and Secretary of State and the Secretary of Defense did at the time was not responding to what they did in Saudi Arabia and letting them choke on it.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, and not taking everybody's eye off the ball because America now struck Iran and Iran plays the victim card. Let them soak in their own juices. I saw an article yesterday, I think, I wish I could remember where I saw it, that said essentially this. Hey, make no mistake about it. All that cash that we sent that direction, billions of dollars, guess what they used it for? They didn't use it for the Iranian people. They used it to sow discontent from Yemen, right, to Iraq, to Lebanon, and into Syria. And now that's drying up. And so they're at a quandary whether they can continue given the economic sanctions and the hurt that's been put on them with this capital infusion that's gone away, trying to sustain what they have abroad while trying to attempt to deal with an economic crisis and now civil unrest inside the country. So it's pretty interesting, you know, and then a little bit different lens. Timmy, you were going to say something.
Yeah. Remember our earlier discussions when we were talking about the Syrian thing, and Jeff and I had been kind of adamant in saying, hey, let the Iranians overreach and take responsibility here. Let the Russians go ahead and try to mediate this. Let the Turks try to go ahead and control this border area. Good friggin' luck. Because when we try doing that stuff, it never works out for us. And the Iranians are much more, we're resilient enough as a country that we can go out there and commit folly after folly after folly, and who gives a shit, really? But Iranians
we have the economic resources and wherewithal to withstand that kind of shit.
Exactly. And Iran does it. I remember in 2011 when you guys cut off the Helmand River to Iran. They were launching missiles into Zarand in like 12 hours. They were so upset because they can't take any kind of disruption to anything, to include the flow of water coming in out of the Helmand River. And so I'm not surprised. But the size and scope of those riots, I bet they're a lot worse than they're letting on, because you don't know. Because Jeff said that the problem with Iran was they had an open kimono. Well, the mullahs closed the kimono, and then they cut the cell service. And hey, when I was in Zarand, I would get on the Iranian cell service. It would say, "Welcome to Iran" in English on my cell phone. It was a very good cell service. And I can't imagine those people without cell phones. I mean, taken away from the Afghans, it'd be a riot.
Once people have those amenities, it's rough to give them up.
Right. I mean, look, you know, we in Iraq, you know, there was a long tradition of those people listened to the BBC. I mean, they would listen to Al Jazeera, but I mean, they did listen to the BBC, and they weren't, you know, they weren't stupid. I mean, they might not say it in public, but they listened. And you know, the number one import after Saddam fell was satellite dishes. Right. It had been pornography and liquor and other things, but after he fell, it was satellite dishes. And they watch, you know, the world news. And so it's interesting. And again, once you allow that lightning out of the bottle and people breathe a little bit of freedom, you know, and then they begin to look at how other people are living, I don't think it's a leap too far to say, hey, why don't we have some of just the basic shit that every fucking buddy else has? And then go into the street. I think it's pretty interesting. The other interesting thing is, I think in Hong Kong, what you've seen with the effectiveness of the Hong Kong protesters and how they create networks by using the Bluetooth in each other's phones to pass messages. I was reading about how they do it. It's crazy technology shit. And they turn this shit on, they turn it off, they materialize, they create their shit, and then they leave. To me, it's fascinating stuff. And the Iranians are fighting, you know, they put the kibosh on that.
Yeah, I read that there's issues in some Chinese mainland cities now, similar to Hong Kong.
Guangzhou province in the south, I believe. They're specifically saying, we want to be like Hong Kongers. they're protesting a crematorium that their government was going to build that was going to pollute the area. And that's exactly what they're using, is the Hong Kong model. And that's not cool for the Chinese.
A crematorium?
I don't know why this popped up in the American Thinker. So it was a quote, and it was the southern Guangzhou province is putting a crematorium near their town, and the people are having none of it. I don't know why this made international news, but it's not the only one. There's apparently a bunch of them in China, and that's not good for the Chinese either. I love it. I mean, because we catch a lot of friction and unintended splashback from our adventures overseas. And I keep on saying, when people freak out about the Iranians or they've got this influence and that influence, that's a double-edged sword. They can't be adroit 100% of the time. We're not that good at it. We're not stupid.
To me, one of the other interesting things is, that news and those internal memos about the concentration camps in China, concentration camps, about the re-education camps for Muslims in China. That shit hit the news, what, a week or two ago, 10 days ago, and it went nowhere.
Yeah.
Could you imagine if any other nation on the planet was doing that shit? Yeah. I mean, it would be batshit.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah, it would be the end of the world. Yeah. That's a scary thing.
Yeah, no, it is. And it's the, You know, just like, you know, the whole LeBron James thing, right? Huge, huge social media statements in this country, right? All of a sudden, you get between them and their money, and they don't have shit to say about people dying, essentially doing in Hong Kong what black Americans did in the 1960s, and that these guys extol constantly on social media, right?
Mm-hmm.
Colin Kaepernick, absolutely. That whole Colin Kaepernick thing, stand for something. Right, even if it costs you everything, and he didn't say shit because Nike makes too much money in China, and that is exactly the fucking game that gets played. But I thought, right? I mean, I thought that there would be black people, you know, black athletes in the NBA and black people in the country that would say that's bullshit, man. But that thing went away too,
because that's what they figured out. It's better to bribe a small group of the right people a lot than to just put a blanket bribe that's not that big over a lot of people. So consequently, there's a United States going down. It's like that. The thing with the NBA is a microcosm of what has been going on for the last 30 years in America with the Chinese. You know, a lot of these guys who are allowing manufacturing to go to China because it's cheaper and stuff, they're making money. They personally are. But the people who used to work for them are on welfare.
Right. No, absolutely.
Is not China behind a lot of the fentanyl that's been imported into this country? Right.
And
so they got these slave labor conditions. They've got these legitimate concentration camps. Yet our college and elite universities, their BDS, their boycott and divest movements, are targeting the Israelis.
Right.
I mean, you've got to be shitting me. The Israelis do more for the Arab economy as far as producing agricultural products that they can use that withstand the sun and heat down there. We use them in the helmet a lot. Israelis have benefited that region immensely.
I don't know if you guys remember, but about a year ago, the Hoover Institute at Stanford put out a report saying that the United States needs to wake up. It's really, if you haven't seen it, it's really interesting report on the way China attempts to, and again, this is how blatant it is. There was a day when, you know, when, and I'll use Hollywood as an example, they shot different scenes, right? Because the content that was going to be in the scene, right, wasn't appropriate for distribution in China. And so there would be, you know, maybe a couple different ways that you would shoot that scene. Now what China says is, no, fuck reshooting the scene for China. You make the movie like that.
Yeah.
So that's where this shit is today. And it talks about all the different ways that China attempts to influence information in the United States from Chinese dissidents who go to work at universities. And China says, look, if you want to have any kind of cultural relationship with us, if you want to have our students who pay out-of-country tuition to come to your university, and we know you need that. You can't survive. Your salaries can't survive. Your tenure program can't survive unless you have 30% of your students come from outside the state or outside the country. And we know that. And we can supply that. All right? But you got to fire that guy. You got to fire that Kenny guy, Kenny-san, or whatever the fuck his name is. And people do. And that's what's crazy about it. And this report from the Hoover Institute talked about that. It's pretty amazing. And then it's just like, nothing to see here, boys. Keep moving. Nothing to see here.
Didn't on one of those superhero movies where they filmed a part of it in China, they had to go through every screen and take off all the clotheslines that are on top of the skyscrapers, because every Chinese skyscraper's got clotheslines on top, and they made them delete every bit of it so it looked like as they're going over a Chinese city, everything's pristine. I mean, that level of supervision, it's weird. You know, why we tolerate that, I don't know. If you're going to boycott and divest against a regime because they're doing stuff that you find evil and abhorrent, what the hell are you picking on the Israelis for?
It's selective bullshit by intellectuals who don't have the courage to tell the truth, right? Because, again, if you won't tell the truth, fuck you, right?
Yeah.
That's why I come on every week and sit here and talk on the radio. I love this. Exactly right.
The report is called
tenuous. You know, I mean, listener Angela Merkel last week talking about how just because you shouldn't have freedom of speech when it infringes on other people. when you use hate speech. That's bullshit. All speech, no matter what you say, you know, vice yelling, hey, there's a fire in here when there isn't, should be, you got to be able to hear it. You got to be able to hear it. This that then, if the idea is so bad, the idea is out there, you argue against it, and it looks like shit. But that's not the way they're going. Like Angela Merkel, she doesn't want to have people say it's not right that Muslims are taking their daughters and mutilating them, you know, according to their religion. And it's not right that we're having all these rapes and stuff like that, and these guys are getting off. It's not right we're letting all these people migrate. Now, maybe you agree with some of that, maybe you don't, but you should be able to say it and argue about it. And if you're proven wrong, then you're proven wrong. Or if you convince people, you get elected. But she's saying, oh, no, we can't have that.
You know, I think she is an ass clown, right?
Yeah. And she's originally East German.
Oh, my God. Well, let me just tell you. I mean, the president was, you know, went to the NATO event, right? And let me tell you, again, I don't always agree with everything the president does. But, you know, when you look at NATO, and here's how the kind of argument grows. You know, there's a 2% target that you're going to spend on your defense of your GDP. Okay, that's what everybody agrees to. And so they don't hit it. Which, and they say, oh, you know, well, we're trying to get there. And so the question becomes this. Why, and so it's phrased like this, and I think it's phrased wrong. Why is America more, right, interested in your freedom than you are? But that's not the right way to phrase it. Why is the American taxpayer more interested, right, more invested in your defense than your own fucking people?
Yeah.
Why? And then President Trump said quite rightly the other day, so now we're going to talk about next year and the target. What about last year and the arrears for last year? What about the year before? What about the year before that?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the other thing, too, is you look at those – I was watching those guys kind of like during their open mic thing where they're basically making fun of the president. And I thought to myself, the reason they don't like the guy isn't because he's sticking up for his people. He's like – what do you mean, your people? We're one group, and then there's those assholes that think that we work for them are the other group. Really, we run stuff, we profit by it, and our job is to get along with each other. So stop, you know, all these agreements and everything. That's just for the consumption of the sheep that are out there, you know, supporting us. That we have no respect for the average person, whether you're a French average person or German. Or, you know, for a lot of the Brits and Italians and stuff, and they figure America's, it was sure as hell the same way from 2009 to 2017. You know, this guy was just, he was one of the cool dudes.
You know, it seemed like there was nothing more important to past presidents than to be liked and accepted by their peers on the international stage, and I don't think Trump gives a shit about any of those people, and I don't think he cares. I don't think he cares for them and doesn't care what they think of him. Because I'm as bad as that nonsense was with the interfering with all those cases we discussed last week, the way that he performed at that summit and leaving without giving a press conference, leaving suddenly like that, I like the message it sends. It seems to me it puts you in a bargaining position relative discussing whatever the hell it is NATO people discuss, which I imagine is funding a lot.
You see, then you get like countries saying, hey, Mr. President, it's me, Hungary. I'll help you.
hey, it's me.
I'll help you.
It's me, Poland. Why are you fucking around in Germany spending billions of Americans' dollars? You know, come to Poland. We'll roll out the fucking red carpet for you. And then what happens in Germany? Germany's like, whoa, wait a minute.
Yeah.
And so I let me tell you, in my opinion, you know, and then let me just tell you, the other asshole over there is that Macron stooge.
He thought
that he was he would be the international leader of leaders, right? And then his country blew up in his face last summer, right? They started rioting, they started burning everything down again, and we haven't heard shit from that dumbass until he came out, a month ago and said, there needs to be an EU army.
That's exactly what I was going to say.
Eight,
Merkel.
All eight motherfuckers, right, with their fucking wooden swords and their fucking their drones with cameras on them, right?
Yeah.
Who the fuck's going to pay for that, and what is it going to do?
Yeah, so they're going to force climate change.
And the third bizarre story of the week, which kind of relates to this because it happened in London, was that Usman Khan guy in the Fishmongers Hall that came out and started stabbing people. Do you know what happened there? How that guy happened to be there and who he stabbed? This is going to freak you out. Ready?
Yeah.
This Usman Khan guy was released early from prison because he had been in some kind of program called the Helping Hands program, which was run out of Cambridge University by this guy named Matt Merritt. He was one of the ones that was killed. And this Khan guy was there, had to get special permission to travel to London, given his status as a former convict, and attend this thing where in the morning he talked about how Mr. Merritt had changed his life and this was a great program. Then he walked into the bathroom, taped two knives to his hands in a fake suicide vest, and came out and stabbed the guy he was just complimenting on his stupid thing, and stabbed the woman that was helping set the thing up. Those are the two that died. But then a bunch of Polish guys started hitting him with narwhal tusks and fire extinguishers. But imagine that. The guy gets released early, specifically comes down there specifically to talk about this guy that helped him get out of prison 8 years early, says he's a great guy, goes in the bathroom, comes out and stabs him.
Yeah, that's right.
They're going to be explaining that away. Like, this is, I understand this. We sure don't want to lose our diversity. We don't want that to become a casualty. They are insane on how they're dealing with their own internal problems. Let them try to defend themselves. That'd be amusing.
It's like the Muslims tell you. They tell you exactly what they're going to do. And they tell you about things that explain some of the things like what you just went through, Timmy. That's taqiyya. That's taqiyya. That's where you're allowed to, in their religion, because you should always fight the infidel.
Right.
But you're allowed to trick them and to deceive them as to your true intentions and to act like, you know, you're actually seeing their points and stuff. And then until you do something like that, it's called taqiyya. You know, they do that. And it's written there in the Quran. In the Quran and in the Hadith.
Let me tell you,
remember out there in California, that couple that shot up all those people they worked with, was at San Bernardino or something?
Yeah.
They were throwing a baby shower for the woman. And she's like, hey, thanks for the baby shower. Oh, but here, let me get my AK and, you know, we're going to shoot you all in the face now. Remember that?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I bring that up only because, look, that is so rare. I mean, I've got so many of friends, Afghans, that are here in America and whatnot. I don't worry about this at all. It's such a rare event. But when something like that happens, if I'm in the mall and somebody pops out with two knives taped to his hand, that's not exactly too stressful for me. He gets two to the chest. It's simple. I wish that would happen. God, it would be. I'd be ecstatic.
But it's not a
problem around here, you know, because most people are armed. It's crazy that the Europeans aren't catching on to any of this, let alone how they're coddling their terrorism things, thinking they can talk these guys out of it with, you know, making butterflies and talking about rainbows and shit.
You know,
most people who are religious, no matter what religion they are, in order to get along, they amend it. You know what I mean? They amend their religion. That goes for Muslims too, for the majority of Muslims. They say, look, I got to get along with these people. We're living side by side. You know, I'm not going to obey Allah or Muhammad and start whacking people out if they don't turn. I'm not going to do that. I got a job. I work for Woolworths, and I don't want to lose it. So I got a family. And it's like that for Christians and Jews and Hindus and stuff. But they got a higher proportion of people who are willing to do all those rules. Those are the good Muslims. Those are doing exactly what, you know, their religious leader told them to do, Muhammad. You know, they're doing that. And so people would say they're cowards or they're radical. They're not. They're doing exactly what he said.
I'll give you an example. When in 2004, when in the summer, do you guys remember John Mayer?
Yeah.
John Mayer is a commander of 1-4. I can't remember if it was 13th or 15th MU. Probably 15th MU.
It wasn't. It was 13th MU, and Regner was the new commander.
Damn it. So, no, he wasn't. It wasn't Regner. It was a different dude.
No, you're right. It was Haslam.
Yeah, I can't tell you why I know it was somebody different, but I'll tell you later.
The John was in, 1-4. They did OIF-1, and they did back-to-back. They went right back with the Mew. And the reason I know is because all the Mews were screwed up then, and all the staffs were, a TO, and were waiting their turn to go out. So that was, let's see, Mary was the BLT, and it was either, no, you're right, it wasn't Regner, was it? Boudreaux was Regner's for 13th Mew when they went out. It was, and it was 1-1. And that was Haslam. Haslam, right. I'm pretty sure, right?
All right, so here's the story. So there's fighting in the Jop. Matata Alsada, dudes are down there. He's rumored to be in and out. And so we finally get him surrounded in, like, the Grand Mosque of Najaf, right? And so now, like, the Iraqi soldiers who fought us twice, okay, and survived, the guys who survived, they're like, we're so excited to be on your side this time. This is fucking awesome, right? Because the last two times we fought, man, you guys steamrolled us like we were shit, and we were just happy to get out of the way and survive. But now we're with you. This is going to be awesome. We are going to drench the walls of that mosque in the blood of these assholes, right? And we're like, yeah, we're probably not going to do that. Like, and they're like, what? Like, yeah, well, we're going to negotiate. And they're like, no, you cannot negotiate. They won't agree to anything. You don't understand. Yeah. In the Quran, you're the infidel. Whatever they do with you is not binding. They'll sign it. They'll walk down the street, and they'll grab another gun, and they'll kill you.
Yep.
Don't you understand anything? And then they said, okay, look, you don't have to go with us, but can your tanks and your aircraft support us? And we will chop all their heads off. We will smear the walls with their blood. And they're like, yeah, no. We're not really going to do a whole lot of, like, wall coloring with blood in a mosque, okay? That's not really what we're looking for right here. And then they were like, how can you be a great country and not annihilate your enemies? And what they said is exactly what happened. We signed a deal, they laid down their arms, they laughed, they picked up more weapons that afternoon, and the fighting went on later.
Yep.
Just crazy. Crazy. Yeah. And they looked at us like, how can you be a great nation and do this? And do this. We don't understand. This is really interesting.
Well, if they had a ninja missile, they could have shot that one through the top and done the same thing, got the same effect, but that years away, right?
Years and years away. But it is. It's that people don't understand. And I'll tell you what I didn't pay attention too much to that story. You want to know? Because it pisses me off. And I learned, like, no, Mac, don't watch that. This is only going to make you angry. But one of the things I did catch, I caught 10 seconds of the mayor of London, right, commending the citizens of London for their character and being stout-hearted.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. That's Winston Churchill during the Battle of Britain, man. Right? It's not fucking asshole politicians who let asshole prisoners out who kill innocent people that are taking picture on the fucking London Bridge.
Yep.
Fucking bullshit.
It absolutely is. But the one thing I want to stress, though, particularly with my time in Afghanistan, was and a lot of those development projects that I did in these more rural villages and whatnot, when you got with the village council and you hammered out what you're going to do, and you shook their hands, okay, this is what I expect from you. As long as you held up your end of the bargain, they held up theirs to the letter of the law. There are just certain areas where they're allowed to be sneaky and conniving and stuff like that. But if you're doing business, they generally were pretty, my experience was as long as you kept your word, they kept theirs. I just wanted to throw that in.
All right.
Yeah.
All
right. But this thing is, this ideological struggle, they're not going to, you're always going to have that bunch over there. And everything we do that we consider to be, like, civilized and merciful, they consider it a weakness and encourages them.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Talk to me about Mexico. How does Mexico get out of this thing that they're in? You know, I've seen people draw parallels to Colombia. And do either one of you have any experience, know people down in that operated in Colombia? And is what, in fact, turned Colombia around? The United States are intelligence assets? Because to me, there's no doubt in my mind that these are terrorist organizations.
Yeah.
I mean, so now we had a great epiphany. Why don't we categorize them as terrorist organizations? And then let's lay the fucking wood to them. And yeah, you might have to fight a few big battles with them, but guess what happens after that? They learn what all these shitbags learn. You better go underground, and you better reduce your signature, which curtails all their business activities, and then they got to become like the mafia, which is they got to become semi-legit.
Right.
Yeah, but Colombia allowed armed agents and allowed military personnel under arms and military aircraft armed in their country. Mexico won't allow any Americans in there with any arms whatsoever. At all, period. That's problem number one.
I saw the president of Mexico the other day. You know, all of a sudden the United States is the enemy.
Bro, that's exactly right.
We're your friend. And how you guys can fuck up being located next door to us for 200 fucking years is beyond us, okay? Yeah. You got to be shitting me, and now all of a sudden we're the enemy.
I tell you right now, the big thing we got going for us was that damn Constitution that we got.
Exactly.
That pesky Constitution.
Yes, it is the wonderful thing. I mean, I used to bitch about some things, but now I, like, really appreciate it. And, you know, the whole way they set this thing up, every time they weaken it, every time they change things, you know, if it is bad for us. But that's what they don't have. You know, they don't have that. That's why in America, if somebody starts saying, like, Angela Merkel, we're going to get rid of this free speech. And there are people in America who are doing it, who want that to go away.
Right. Then, absolutely are.
No, then that's the danger. This thing is not as, you always took it for granted that, hey, you get to say what you want in America. It's not that way anymore. It's something we got to watch out for. And I'll tell you, that stuff down there in Mexico, that's exactly right. Mexico, Italy, Colombia, and a lot of these countries, they're basically... They reach a understanding with these thugs, with these terrorists, and like in Sicily, they killed the, I mean, this is as late as the 80s. They killed our version of the Attorney General, you know, for that part of Italy. They Falcone and some other guy and his wife. I mean, they're openly murdering police and stuff, just like they do in Mexico now, and just like they used to do. And Colombia is actually struggling with unrest now again because of this stuff. It is something that, you know, if you think you're going to be able to make deals with people like that, sooner or later, they're like Rumpelstiltskin, evil. They come back and they're going to want what they consider to be your payment for what they did for you. You got to have nothing to do with them except for, you know, dealing with their lawyers when you got in charge with something. Otherwise, they will be a force to be reckoned with. They'll be an armed force within your weak ass corrupt country. That's what's going on in Mexico right now. They got this, what, fix Timmy, what is it? You know, cartels, big ones, that all have the stake, and nothing gets across that border, I believe, from Mexico into America without those cartels saying yay or nay.
Oh, no, they're absolutely, they've even lassoed up the avocado industry. They take something off the top of everyone. But the Colombians got tired when who was that guy that the Delta guys went and killed? The big bad guy. What?
Escobar.
Yeah, Escobar. The Colombians got tired. When Escobar started bombing their capital and killing the politicians, they got at least excited enough to allow us to come in and help with enablers. And I how many enablers and how effective and what they did, I don't know. I don't think we're going to
know. Okay,
hold on. That.
Explain, stop speaking code. What does enabler mean?
That would be Delta Force guys with sniper rifles. guys that could lead and plan and execute raids with Colombians.
That's a fucking enabler right there.
That's an enabler. And the helicopter crews to fly them in there, too. So that was a pretty considerable effort on our part. Mexico's not going to allow that to happen. And what's going to happen is it's going to get to the point where we're going to have to intervene, and it's going to be like the Wild West. And And in anticipation, I'm already doing map studies on how to get porta-johns and honey pumper trucks, because I'm going to make a fortune when the pods come. That's going to be the way to
go. You know, that's the astute businessman right there.
War, yeah, dude,
war will take place. But the question of who deals with the waste products at the firm base, is that something that I can make a profit on? That's something that's my own little corner of the world that I can make better.
I learned that in Afghanistan. There's parts of the Panjshir province where they love me, because I told those guys that when they were trying to smuggle beer across the border. I'm like, beer? You want honey dipper trucks, dude? What the hell? And they did. They did very well.
Mm-hmm. They have it. Go ahead, Jeff.
William Randolph Hearst is smiling down at you, or smiling up at you from hell, one or the other. I don't know.
That is true. It's like, you know, and Smedley Butler, I'm no doubt, came to the same conclusions, right?
Yeah.
That look, these things will happen, but you know, only the why. I might as well profit from them. I could sit and I could whine about this shit all fucking day. But yeah. I mean, what good does that do? I might as well, right? I might as well provide some services and make a little money off it and ride off into the sunset in a good way as a happy human being, as opposed to being the miserable son of a bitch that I am right now.
Hey, man, you don't want cheap porta-johns, dude. Those things are a morale crusher. Got to have good. Yeah, that's the good stuff.
No, that's what I mean. You talk about things that make people happy, right? And that is, you know, and that is blue water shitting.
Yep.
Right. When those trucks go down, right? I mean, nobody's happy. Nobody's happy. So.
For a man of our age, a good porta-john, blue water service, and beta prostate is the best thing for.
But no, if you could imagine it, Iraq, when. Like, I don't know, these dudes were from Eastern Europe, I think, that ran the shit-sucking trucks, right? So they come, and they service all the porta shitters. And they come, and it's about, what, some place between 115 and 130 on a regular basis, okay? So you can just imagine, when that truck breaks and nothing gets sucked out of that thing, pretty soon you have a mountain. It looks like a chocolate snow cone. That comes out of the shit receptacle hole, right? And you go in there, what do? Well, yep. you have to what women call hover, right? Right? You have to hover. I did not know what hovering was until one of them told me. Like, yeah, you got to go out there and hover. I'm like, what's hover mean? Well, you got to, you know, you don't sit on the seat. I mean, come on. Women learn that when they're like little kids. I said, what do you... Really? You don't sit on a seat? No, only men do. You're stupid. Evidently. And so, yeah. And then.
I hovered with Nowzad in the wag bag, district of Helmand Province. Remember the wag bags?
Explain to everybody what a wag bag is.
A wag bag is an invention akin to the 8-cylinder engine in cars, in that. It projected our technology forward. What a wag bag is it is a bag that contains chemicals in it that render human waste non-toxic. So what you do is you tape this thing, and the tape is already on it, much like a Pampers diaper. You tape it to, like, say, a planking hole that, you know, would be used for a really primitive, even when they don't have porta-johns. It's just, you know, or the porta-john doesn't have a ability to have the blue water. And so you sit on this thing, and you tape up your wag bag, and you deposit your waste into it, and then you retrieve it, you tape it up, and then you throw it in the wag bag disposal, which is usually the purview of the company gunny who owns that area.
There you have it, the wag bag.
Wow.
Yeah, not the optimum. Right, not the optimum shitting situation, but right, one has to make do in time of need. So it's so the trucks, so replacement parts for shit sucking trucks, right? They're like class one Like the first thing that the commanding officer, that the colonel who owns the battlespace space gets briefed on is part status of what's the backorder status of the part for the shit sucking truck at you know at burn base. I'll tell you what, there was a story that General Kelly's, he wasn't really his aide, right? He was an artillery, you know, platoon commander, and he ran General Kelly's PSD, and it was in his PSD that Lance Corporal Chance Phelps was killed in an ambush down on Route San Juan, headed for like Escanderia and Momondia, on the back way, kind of from Takata.
He had that battle space when the Mew was there.
Right. That's where he used to stick the moves. So anyway. He tells me General Kelly rolls into some fur base down in that battle space, Momondia, Escanderia, which is essentially south-southwest out of Baghdad, and right up the river, and the Euphrates River, if I'm not mistaken. And so Kelly shows up, and the heads are just filthy. And he says something. He says, hey, I'm going to go do some battlefield circulation, but those things need to get cleaned. He comes back, he dismounts, he walks over to the shitters, and they're not clean. So he goes in, uses them, comes out, comes into the battalion CP, and he says, hey, where's the police sergeant? And I'm like, he's over there, sir. And so General Kelly walks over, he goes, hey, where's your shit to clean? And he's like, it's right here, sir. He said, I need a pair of gloves and a brush and some, you know, paper towels and some cleaning stuff. And the sergeant looks at him and he's like, sir? And he goes, just give me what I just asked for. Yes, sir. Kelly goes back out with all the shit, back out to the shitters, right? And this lieutenant, now he comes into CP looking for General Kelly, and he sees the sergeant major and the CO look out the window and like, he's going out to clean our shitter, Sergeant Major. And they like,
oh man,
they both went running out there, and Kelly, and they and Kelly then cleaned the shitter.
Wow.
Yeah. Right. I mean, that's not a small deal, right? It's not a small deal, and so Timmy's got an idea that will make him a ton of money. Well done, Tim.
And I like that story with General Kelly. That's the kind of story that circulates very quickly.
Well, Kelly Parr enlisted guy. He didn't fuck around.
Yeah.
There's the American History Channel or the American Hero, one of those two. But me and my wife watched this series they had on the men who built America. It's like,
that's awesome.
Yeah, Carnegie. And
yeah, it's like economic history in the United States.
And but then they had one, the food that made America great. It's all about Hershey and Heinz, the Heinz ketchup, and how parallel these guys, they're looking at stuff that's going on with cereal mills and all this shit, and they're capitalizing on it. And the thing about it that's interesting was all these huge cities, you know, sprung up at the same time in the Industrial Revolution, and the idea of mass food was alien to everybody.
Right.
So he came up with it. I'll tell you, that guy Hershey, he's like a hero. He's a chocolate guy.
Right.
As far as being a model for how to not treat your workers like they're the enemy.
Oh, really?
Unlike Carnegie and those other guys.
Yeah. Who's rotting in hell as we speak. You know, but I mean, and all those guys, what puts all those guys into hyperspace is World War II.
Oh, yeah, that's the
Carnegie before, but guys like Hershey and Vandekamps, I mean, they all had these fledgling businesses, but their ability to conquer packaging and mass-produce, right?
Well, that's the thing, like the Kellogg guy. Kellogg was this doctor who, you know, he's a real highly educated guy, and he comes up with this idea he's going to have a sanatorium where people can get better. And so one of the things he had was like, he made granola. He invented granola. He had a younger brother whose parents said, you know, I can't remember the names, but the parents were like, you know, this guy's not too bright. So we'll just stick him with his brother, and he'll do odd jobs for his brother. And so he comes up with this idea for cornflakes. He's like, hey, you know, we can make money off this. and the, of course the doctor poo-poos it, doesn't let him do it. They get this guy named Post, who he went bankrupt in some business. He's like watching, and he invents grape nuts, right? And that's the first cereal to really take off. You know, this the dumb brother who's really smart is pulling his hair out, going, "Let me, I can make this thing I invented by accident called, we're going to call it Wheat Flakes." And then they started using corn to make it. Like, no, it's Corn Flakes. And that was it, you know, it propelled them into the stratosphere. But you're right. And then in World War II, all those guys, it just took off.
Right.
You know?
Right. And if you go to history.com and then the search window, if you just type in the food that built America, you'll see it. But for this is the About the Series. For generations, food giants like Henry Heinz, Milton Hershey, John and Will Kellogg, C.W. Post, and the McDonald brothers have literally been household names, but you don't know their stories. Before they were brand names, they were brilliant, sometimes ruthless visionaries who revolutionized food and changed the landscape of America forever. And so that's what the series looks like.
Mike, Mac, the thing with the what really made it bad for like Carnegie and Rockefeller and those guys was the competition between each other.
Oh, I thought you were going to say that pesky Constitution.
Yeah, that they jack up the production hours and cut the number of workers, and eventually everything's going crazy, and then you got the progressive movement pops up in the 1890s, their version of the 1890s. William Jennings Bryan, he gets beat by McKinley, who's basically controlled by the big government. And then the second term he runs, the big problem they have is this new politician who was a war hero, who was making noise about not busting these trusts that were basically abusing workers. And the guy's name's Theodore Roosevelt.
Right.
And they said, no, we'll make him the next vice president. Because I guess in those days, being a vice president was like, you're kissing babies.
Yeah, they off-dramped him at that position. Yeah. And then they collectively shit their pants. But Roosevelt, here's what I find so interesting is if you read Edmund Morris's biography, and it's
all three of them.
Yeah, I mean, if you read those things about Roosevelt, I mean, they describe his journey, and Roosevelt's part of the elite of the country, right? The Roosevelt family and Oyster Bay and all that bullshit. But he's a well-read dude. He's been Secretary of the Navy. He's been the commissioner, the head of the New York City Police Department. They talk about him going to work the first day as the head of the police department. He runs up like 67 marble stairs at the New York Police Department, like the headquarters, right? In his black tails. And you're like, what the fuck is wrong with this dude? But they describe after McKinley's assassination, as he comes from Buffalo, right, down the Hudson River to New York City, and then down through all the areas that railroads go through, which are not the areas that Roosevelt's familiar with. And he knows in his head, after watching the anarchy movements in Europe and the unrest in Europe, that if he doesn't do something to close the disparity between the classes, that the United States is going to go through something similar. And so he's such a visionary relative to public policy. And I will tell you this. I believe the country is in a similar place. And I don't want to sound like a communist or a socialist, but, right?
You're right.
But if we don't do something to restore hope for the American worker that they can live the American dream, you are going to have this socialist shit going to go on, and it's going to be, in my opinion, that would be the undoing of the nation. Now, I don't know if that means the minimum wage has to go to $25 an hour. And if you work at McDonald's and those are the jobs that we have in this culture, then guess what? You're going to get paid more. And those companies have to fucking pay those people more. Because there cannot be this disparity between wealth and the nation, especially what's been so stable in this country is the great middle class. And what built that? Unions built that. Right?
Yeah, until they were talking about at the beginning of this with the Chinese, and a little bit with the with the universities, you know, academia or whatever you want to call it. These guys got a, they got, they're the haves and everyone else is the have-nots. And you're absolutely right. Something's got to be done. The way they're doing business is what's done this. You know, this idea that, there's like a, they hate Trump because he's spitting in the hand of the brotherhood of the haves, you know, over there in the, you know, when he goes to Europe and stuff. I agree with you. You know, the whole thing has got to, there's got to be a lessening of that gap, between poor people and,
you know, Australia has that. They're every job's a living wage. My kids are over there. My daughter's getting, I think, $30 an hour working in a vineyard. But they subsidize their economy significantly. I'm not sure how they go about doing that. But they've also got a much smaller population, and they've got a cultural history of being distrustful of very rich and wealthy people, obviously, having been founded by people that were sent away instead of prison. I guess they would. So they've got a cultural heritage that kind of facilitates keeping everybody at the same level. Right now, the guys that are making money through the stratosphere, they're just Silicon Valley people. And right now, when we talk about sometimes we feel like we can't express ourselves as we really want to, it's not the government that's impacting our speech. It's the Silicon Valley people who are dictating speech codes and whatnot. And quite frankly, how you get to an economy that starts evening things out when they're controlling all the media, that's a problem too, I think, because how the hell are you going to do that? They control, they're controlling the medium.
If you look at Roosevelt's example, it is, you know, what he got through Congress, right? The 8-hour workday, right? Child labor law, right? Yeah. Those were unheard of.
What was the act about food?
The Safe Food Act, or I can't remember something like that. But I mean, he's even visionary enough at the turn of the century, right? 1904, whatever the fuck, he's killing the national park system. He's protect. I mean, you look at what Roosevelt does, and it's crazy. And he takes on, right? He's the trust buster, right? But he goes to war with Carnegie, who he and Roosevelt, who he believes are restraining trade.
And he has boxing matches in the White House, which is friggin' manly, and you've got to love that. But who's going to take on the gig economy? Who's going to say, oh, we don't like this whole gig economy thing? Because that's most of Facebook, Apple, Intel, all those corporations, most of their employees are part-time giggers. You know, they're contract workers, and they get treated like shit. It's a caste system. It's like I heard the joke. The joke I hear is, "Don't bother showing up on Sunday if you're not here on Saturday."
That's an old Disney. I mean, nobody squeezes a dollar like Disney. Yeah, don't even bother showing up on Sunday if you didn't show up on Saturday.
Right, and so which I don't think is exactly a healthy way to start managing your human capital. But how do you fight that when they've got a gigantic? I could see Trump doing that, but that Trump's no Roosevelt. That's not going to be his thing. I don't see how I don't see a way out, is what I'm saying.
You know, that thing, those books you referenced, though, by Edmund Morris, I read those, you know, when I was in my 20s. When the first one came out, the Rise of Theodore Roosevelt was the first one.
Right.
And I thought that was just fantastic. I mean, I'll never forget this part. He goes to the Wild West after his wife and mom die the same day. And He settles his affairs a little bit so he can get out there. He goes out there,
North Dakota,
right? And he's got a ranch, and they're wrangling horses and stuff. And he's yelling at these cowboys who work for him. He's saying he went to them, get up there, you know, get over there and head those things off. But what he says is, because he's so educated, hasten forward quickly there.
and he's wearing these fringe colored buckskins, right?
Yeah.
With these, all these guys are like, have these like beat the fuck clothes on and fucking coats and fucking roll their own cigarettes and these crazy hats, and they're looking at him like, what the fuck is this dude? But they loved him.
Yeah, because he had guts, and I mean, he'd do anything. And then if somebody fucked with him, as long as he had his glasses on. a throw, a jab, a straight right, and a left hook, and it's over, man, you know?
No, and they ultimately become the Rough Riders.
Yeah.
And leadership by example, where have we heard that before?
Well, you know what? I was just looking at an article about wealth in time, and I don't know what happened to it. Comparing the size of fortunes across time periods, and which to me is historically, are we in a different place? Is this just the same song, right? It's just the contemporary version of a same song. And so I'm looking for either a graph or something that shows if the top 1% controls more now than it has throughout history. And so that's what I'm looking for. But to me, what Roosevelt did, right, is what we have to look at today. And that is the American worker, and let me just tell you what I think is wrong. This whole idea of the North American Free Trade Agreement. Well, what's wrong about those agreements is this. We're gonna stop the tariff system. Okay. Now, Mexico doesn't have a Food and Drug Administration. They don't have an EPA. They don't have Social Security. So none of the overhead that American producers have to deal with are going to be levied on them. And we're going to call that free and fair trade? Like, are you fucked in the head? It's not. And the same thing with chemicals. You can't use that chemical here in the United States. You have to use the chemicals. The one they use in Canada costs $5 a gallon. The one we use here in the United States costs $100 a gallon. That's fair trade. But the Canadian can use that chemical and then ship into the country. That's bullshit. Yeah. And we do this, and then we put people out of business, and then we say, well, geez, not really sure why these jobs all migrated overseas. Bullshit, man.
Bullshit.
And then you sell the American middle class down the road in an effort to do what? Ingratiate yourself to big businesses who don't give a shit about the workers who are going to transfer those means of production overseas so they can make more money.
Yeah.
And that's a political fucking decision, and so I think that needs to end.
Now, you're not the only guy that goes on about this, and I absolutely agree with you, but and this is something you hear a lot if you listen to podcasts, but I sure as hell don't hear it anywhere else. Where are the Democrats? Where are the Republicans? We got a presidential election coming up.
Right.
Now, Trump talks about it a little bit in his own self, and I'm a big supporter, so I'm all for it, but let's be honest. Trump's not addressing this seriously and systematically as we'd like to
see
addressed.
Well, I would say this, in that he addresses it in terms of
China.
Well, I mean, he's like stupid deals.
He makes good tweets about it.
Well, stupid deals that we do, he calls them stupid, right?
Right.
So, wait a minute. I'm expected, China puts like 325% tariffs on our shit, right? We can't sell a car into China. And yet we don't do anything that reciprocates, and that's free trade. And I'm not supposed to. And the same thing with the fucking NATO deal. The one thing the best thing he does is when he calls out these stupid fucking things we do and say, okay, why are we doing that? What's the gain in all of this for the United States? And why are we? Why is the American taxpayer footing the bill for Germany's defense?
Yeah,
and this is why he's going to get four more years, because I don't think the average American, I know I don't. I don't think they trust the media. We have been lied to, and we've been and we're being talked to like we're idiots, particularly by the contenders in the Democrat side right now with all their free this, free that stuff. I know they won't do that if they get reelected. I understand the game, but it's annoying because it's not true. And at least you know what the hell President Trump is thinking, because you get to hear it every day. And it tends to be whatever he's saying. Sometimes he's wrong. I'd be dead wrong on this stuff with Gallagher and all these other guys. Dead friggin' wrong. But at least you know what the hell he's saying. And he's not hiding things. It does not appear.
That's what I mean. He does these tweets. It's the most information that I know what the guy's thinking. I know he wants me to. He's telling me. You know what I mean? When he does these things, these tweets, and there's, oh, it's not very presidential. Ah, fuck you, man. I'm sick of hearing that shit, you know? Who cares if it's president?
You know, and I wanted to like Obama. I wanted Obama to do good as president and become somebody. I really did. But I mean, who the hell knew what he was doing? Because you never knew what the hell he was really thinking, because everything that he said was so scripted and it seemed poll tested and whatnot. Who cared? After a while, it didn't matter what he did, because I found the guy to be inauthentic and boring.
But I think that most presidents have gone down the same road Obama did. I think he had more, you know, he followed Bush, who was like an awkward doofus, right? Bush follows Clinton, who is as gifted a politician, right? Again, I'm not a fan of the guy, but if you can't say that he's a pretty gifted politician, you have your head up your ass.
Oh, he was an excellent politician, but he was wounded his second term.
I'm not talking about that. I'm just talking about here's my question. Here's what I think is most interesting about Trump. Has he changed the American presidency forever? I mean, every day he goes out to the helicopter, he lays the wood, and he drives the news cycle, right? I mean, every day he does that, and he's got the chair, right, with the whip, and he's got everybody around him, and he's fighting everybody. Do you think he's changed the presidency for forever? Do you think the person, whoever follows him at whatever point, be it 4 years or 8 years, do you think that person will then go back and say, we're going to go back to monthly briefings in the White House, and we'll have a daily press briefing? I don't see myself as really interacting with the American people like President Trump did. Do you think?
Your question is very good. It's very good. And if you look back, as I'm listening to you ask, I'm thinking, I'm going back to the Rolodex in my mind. Great Republican presidents, right? And so you got Abraham Lincoln, and then you got Theodore Roosevelt, and you got Ronald Reagan, and then you got this guy. Who copied Lincoln or Theodore Roosevelt or Reagan? Nobody. They would do what they did. They caused it. They had a huge, I think, you know, overall beneficial effect, and then nobody had the balls to do like they did. Nobody. I mean, what we got after, we got after Theodore Roosevelt was this vice president pretty much wanted to give the whole thing back to the South. What we got after Theodore Roosevelt, you got Taft, who was like a non-entity, and then you got Woodrow Wilson. He wanted to go back to slavery almost, the stuff he put back on black people, you know?
Really?
Senators and stuff. Yeah, and then then Reagan, the guy after him, we got was Read My Lips, No New Taxes, and then a shitload of new taxes. And so, you know, no one has followed a great guy or, you know, a pivotal guy with more of that. They go back to, let's get back to getting along with each other. I hope to God I'm wrong. I hope we get another guy that's even more like him, like somebody who says, you know what, I'm going to be like this guy. I'm working for you. People who voted for me through the Electoral College that the Constitution set up, I'm working for you, you know? I'm not part of a big, oligarchy that is above you. I'm working for you. That was, I hope.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what, I think he's changed the presidency forever in terms of that. That look, you can, if in terms of getting your message out, you drive the news cycle. Gone are the days when those people that come into the White House, you know, they deal with your press secretary and then they go out and say whatever the fuck they want to about, this is what the president intends. Yeah. You go out there every day, you take 15 or 20 minutes every day and you speak to the American people and you drive their ass, they don't drive your ass. So I think why would you go back the other way? And if you look at the blueprint, right, it is. Here's a guy who's been embattled his entire term, right? And he's gonna, right? And if he gets reelected, people are gonna point and say, look, it was his combativeness every day, him not having it every day, and that's what won him. His speaking directly to the American people, and the president doesn't need the media anymore. The president is his own messenger.
That's it.
Pretty interesting.
Every day he's been fighting Clubber Lang, man. Every day. It's incredible. Nothing like it in history.
There hasn't been, but I agree with exactly what Jeff just said. His success right now guarantees he won't be duplicated. I promise you the next guy or gal that follows him is going to go back to business as usual. Let's go back to the way things are supposed to be with all of our properly credentialed people, and we'll all speak nicely to each other.
I don't believe that for a second. I think the people that are going to come beyond him are going to be more tech savvy and more media savvy, and they will have studied his ass, and they will say, there's no way I'm going back to allow those chumps in the fucking press room to define what goes out on a daily basis to the American people. I will define. I think if you allowed that somebody else to tell your story when you could tell it yourself, you're a fool.
Yeah. I mean, you know something? You know, Tim, I think that what you said about those Silicon Valley people, you're absolutely right. They are the Rockefellers and Carnegies of today. And they're deciding, you know, this and that about what they're going to put on there. And they're going to, you know, and some of the media, some of the deep staters, you know, like 60 Minutes, right, they're pushing them. You need to start, you know, censoring things, you know, because we can't have this hate speech. It means anything you disagree with if you're a liberal or, you know, depending on who says it. We can't have that. So, and these people, unlike the old days with guys like William Randolph Hearst and you know, Pulitzer, they made a lot of money, but nothing compared to what Carnegie and, you know, Rockefeller are making. And now these guys, but now these media folks, these new media folks, they're making more than both of them combined.
And, exactly. Yeah, Bezos has more than those guys all combined.
Yeah, and the person who takes them on, I don't know if Trump, I can't see him doing it. He's too beleaguered. You know, but if he wins this thing and he does his whole 8 years of hooking and jabbing, and we do get somebody like, I hope Mac is right, then that guy, you know, maybe Trump will start it. That guy starts the new, you know, the new idea of making sure that these new trusts, these huge media things that control what we think, what you see for advertisements that pop up on your phone or your computer comes from these guys controlling, you know, what you get to see based on, you know, making money. And if we're funny, just based on making money.
And it's so damn easy to do. It's so damn easy just by putting certain suggestions and the way that you word things, you can influence people's decision. I did that on a blog post. I think I did this on the podcast where I mentioned three facts regarding illegal immigration and McAllen. And one of the facts was that the bus that leaves here with all the immigrants stops in San Antonio, and it is a fact that San Antonio is the number three in property crimes in America behind Seattle and San Francisco. Huh. Now, with what I was discussing, you would assume that the migrants are getting off in San Antonio and committing property crimes, which they may well be due. I have no idea if that's true or not. But if you connect them all in a sentence a certain way, you're priming the people you're talking to assume something naturally. And that's what the press does and Facebook. They do this in much more devious and sneaky ways than the example I just used.
And it's
concerning to me because I don't know when I'm being manipulated, but I feel pretty confident I do, but who the hell knows?
And I've seen some of these people for Facebook and for, you know, Google and stuff who are up there being questioned by Congress, and they'll say, well, that's just the algorithm. who decides what the algorithm is, buddy?
Yeah.
And they feel no sense of responsibility for shit their company's doing because, like, it's like there's algorithms, this magic sauce you got to squirt into it. You know what I mean? Otherwise, it's like.
Yeah, and the algorithms never seem to hit anti-fa, but they seem to get every right wing and conservative leaning organization. I mean, on Facebook, they've demonetized a ton of contact producers. Some of those guys have gone under. And a lot of them have switched into a pay for content mode. You know?
How does a public utility that has such a huge impact on the nation not be regulated? We broke up like the Bell system years ago because that monopoly was, you know, was thought to be too restrictive. And so when you see that kind of power, you know, in so few hands, you're asking, you know, you're who amongst us believes that people in that company are not putting their hand right on the scale And
both admitted.
Any final thoughts, Timmy?
Nope. I'll be keeping an eye on the Port-a-John market down here in South Texas. That'd be a good indicator of what the military is up to, I do believe.
No, I mean, I hope that Mexico says we want to sit down with the United States, because let me tell you, if you watch the protest that came out of Mexico this past week, it was Mexican people that are saying, we're pissed, man. This is crazy.
That last big gun battle they had, those boys crossed into America to get around behind that town and flank those police forces. So you had last week, outside of Laredo, 40 truckloads of armed Mexicans screaming across the river and driving on American side and then going back over to Mexico to get into a gunfight. It's a matter of time before they come across the border and start to raise havoc over here. It's just a matter of time. If they've done it before, they'll do it again.
Hotel Vicks with Mod Deuces on it.
Right, and they have, and they're marked with the logo, the brand of the cartel that they belong to.
They're not hard to pick out. Yeah.
Oh, shit, it's like they have their own Eagle, Globe, and Anchor. It's us, boys. Get out of the way.
It's like the Gambino family.
Yeah.
With like a logo on it. You know?
Right, and so anyway. All right, Jeff, final thought, Jeff?
When we start talking about logos on mob cars, I'm done.
All right, there you have it. That is another installment of the Lynch and Kenny event. More of All Marine Radio coming up next, right here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.